podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, May 30th, 2020, episode 1699. Enjoy. The Tech Guy comes to you from TWiT's LastPass studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless. Whether they're working in the office or remote, visit lastpass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of The Tech Guy brought to you by Masterclass, online classes taught by the world's greatest minds. Get unlimited access to every Masterclass, and as a listener, you'll get 15% off the annual all-access pass. Go to masterclass.com/TWiT. And by Epson. Are you tired of expensive toner cartridges? Meet the Epson EcoTank Pro. It's cartridge-free, so you can print thousands of pages. Designed for high-volume, heavy-duty printing, add the Epson EcoTank Pro to your online shopping list at Best Buy, Office Depot, Office Max, Staples, and at Epson.com/EcoTankProLeo. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, that thing, I remember that. That was the show we used to listen to where they talk about tech. Whatever happened to tech? Oh, it's still here. So am I. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Love to hear from you if you want to talk about tech. Anything going on in your world? Any issues you have? Something you're excited about? Doesn't always have to be a problem. But it can be if you want. 888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. Are you watching the? Are you watching the launch? I shouldn't. You know, first rule of radio: never talk about competing content. But what? In about hour and a half, a little less, we're going to have the first manned space launch in since 2011, 9 years. Since the shuttle Atlantis, that was the last one. Now we're going back in space, the Dragon. And then this time it's what's interesting. It's NASA. Yeah, but it's a vehicle, a launch vehicle developed, created by a private space entity, commercial space. That's a big difference. In this case, Elon Musk's SpaceX. And you could tell there's a little Elon, there's a little bit of Elon in this launch. Elon Musk, who is also, besides SpaceX, which he founded in, I think, 2002, and its stated goal is not to, you know, supply food to this space station. That's just an interim goal. Its stated mission, its long-term goal, is to put a man on Mars, or woman, on Mars, on Mars. Elon has his, well, Elon's a character, isn't he? He's very committed to this notion that we gotta get out of here. Hey, some people, you know, will say, oh, you know what would be good to fix the planet, you know, so that we can stay here. But Elon says, no, let's not fix it. Let's just get out of here. Let's go. Let's evacuate. And it starts with a mission to Mars. So that's what SpaceX's goal is. And, you know, they're pretty far along. Here we are with a manned mission in the Dragon vehicle. You also know there's a little Elon in this because there's some things about it that are very Elon. For instance, the Dragon has LIDAR. They even call it autonomous docking, like the Tesla. It will, well, that's good. It will dock itself. And if you've ever, there is an online simulator from NASA and SpaceX for the docking simulator. And if you've done it, it's hard. It's iss-sim.spacex.com. And it is using the Dragon X controls. And you have the, it's pretty cool, actually. Cool is a word you're going to hear a lot during this launch. Everything's cool. It feels like the broadcast, which I've been watching on NASA TV. You can also watch it on YouTube Live. There, again, I plugged a competitor. That's okay. It's okay. I understand the excitement people have around this. I do, too. If you're into tech, you're kind of into space, right? That's kind of, they're related. There's a lot of tech in this stuff. I grew up watching the, as a kid, you know, the Gemini, Walter Cronkite sitting there, the Gemini, Mercury, Gemini, then the Apollo, as man goes to the moon. I'll never forget it. That was a developmentally important part of my life. So it's exciting to watch. I had the TV on this morning, hours before. They do a big, long broadcast. It, the other bit of Elon is, and this is NASA, modern NASA too understands that a lot of what NASA does these days is marketing. A lot of it is about winning the hearts and minds of the American public because, you know, there are people who will say, oh, we shouldn't be spending all this money on manned space missions and all that stuff. I think we should. It's a small fraction of the federal budget. Other countries are doing it, China and Russia and I think it's important that we be doing it. It's for pure research, but also just for the inspirational excitement of it. It's good for us to have something to look up to, especially these days when down here on planet Earth, it seems like the whole world is melting. It's nice to think about something else, right? Something more positive. So he's got the LIDAR. It looks like it was designed. It looks like it's a movie. Which I think is a kind of a mistake. It might be better to look a little more utilitarian, only because there are a small, tiny percentage of people who think the whole thing is fake and the moon landing was faked and it was all shot in a Hollywood stage. This really looks Hollywood. It does. The NASA, the crew, the capsule crew, they look like ninjas. They're dressed in black with big numbers on their back. And, of course, they're wearing masks, as we should be, to protect the astronauts. Astronauts aren't wearing masks. They've been in quarantine for weeks. So they're safe. But you don't want to infect them. You don't want to take COVID-19 to the space station. That'd be bad. That would be a bad outcome. So they're all wearing masks. And they're in black. You know, remember in the old days in the Walter Cronkite era, everybody's dressed in white, clean suits, right? And it's a white room, the clean room and all that stuff. Now the crew is, the astronauts are wearing white. And by the way, spacesuits straight out of a sci-fi movie. You bet. Streamlined. They got iPads strapped to their knees. It's cool looking, you know? And the ninjas that are getting them into the capsule are in all in black. The capsule itself, you know, it's smooth lines. And then the seats, this is very, very Tesla. The seats, they put them in the seats, they strap them, and then the seats rotate up to get them in position. They never did that in the old days. The old days, they get them in the seats the way they're going to be. The seats are fixed. No, we want a motor. It's just cooler that way. Just kind of cool. The Dragon X has four seats. They're only using two because this is a test mission. But, you know, some things never change. Because I remember one of the things I remember about watching Walter, Uncle Walter, is the holds, the long holds. And Walter was so good. They used to call him Old Iron Butt. Seriously. He was famous for just being able to sit in the anchor chair for hours. Well, we're 3 hours into the hold on Apollo 4, and he's got, you know, nowadays they got graphics, it's such a different experience. They got satellites, they got people all over in interviews. They're even checking the Twitter feed and the Instagram feed. Okay, I could do without the picture of the cats in the space rockets and the... But, you know, hey, it's NASA. We got to promote. We got to be where the kids are. Got to get the kids. So they're on the Instagram. And they're showing the Instagram feed on the feed. Walter would never have done that. Walter would never have said, this is really cool. No, he didn't have to. He looked and he'd go, well, you could tell this is cool, isn't it? But he wouldn't say it was cool. Walter probably thought that's jazz lingo. I'm not going to use jazz lingo on a news broadcast. But I do remember him sitting there for hours waiting on these long holds as the astronauts sit there. I don't think they do holds anymore. I don't know. I think they called it Wednesday. They tried to launch, too, and the weather stopped it. They said it's an instantaneous window. They launch or not. There's no waiting. It's either now or never. Now they're going to try it again in about an hour and a half, 15 minutes. So, it's pretty exciting, you know? It's pretty darned exciting. I'm happy they're doing it. That's tech, isn't it? True. Now, instead of all, remember in the old Apollo vehicles, they had like 1,000 switches, just toggle. And all they were doing as they were getting ready for launch is, if you could see it, because they didn't have cameras, they were tick, flick, tick, flick, tick, flick, flip, 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 checking the switches, turning them on and off, make sure they're working, seeing if a light comes on. Now it's just giant, big screens, three giant, like 30-inch screens in front of them. Very modern. I like it. I think it's you know what? Cool is good. You got to make it cool, because then the kids, they'll go, oh, this is cool. And the congressmen and women, members of the Congress, will say, oh, this is cool. And everybody get excited about it. I think that's good. Everybody excited. Ready to go. All right. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to launch. I've been sitting and strapped into the vehicle here in my white astronaut outfit with the helmet on and everything, ready for you. And now we're ready to launch. Are you ready to launch? All right, we're going to get to your phone calls. 888-ASK-LEO, the website, techguylabs.com. That's free. It's open. No sign up. Always where we put everything, so you can get it after the show, even audio and video from the show, plus all the answers. James DeRuvo, my scribe, is writing that down. That's techguylabs.com. We have a chat going, always, irc.twit.tv. You're welcome there. And we'll get to your calls in just a moment. It's a miracle. You know, the miracle is you, Kim Schaffer, the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer, our phone angel. Kimmy, don't take no Schaffer. Hello, Kimmy.
Good morning.
Good morning. Are you interested in space?
I've got the stream going. I was looking forward to it firing off on Wednesday, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, you watched that too? Yes, so do we. Yeah. It's funny. It's exciting. It's nice. Especially, we're going through such a tough time now.
That makes me a little worried.
I know. It's nice to look to the stars when...
I want to have something positive happen after this week, but...
I know. What a terrible, awful, no good, very bad week it has been.
I almost said a word I wasn't supposed to say.
Don't say bad words. You know, you can get in trouble.
It almost flew out of my mouth.
No. What a week. So, but we're taking calls, 888 Ask Leo.
And people still have tech problems.
Oh, they never go away. That's the secret of my success. People are constantly suffering.
Yeah.
And I'm here to heal.
Yes, you are.
If I can. Who should I heal first?
How about Martin in Palmdale, California?
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Martin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo.
Morning.
Nice talking to you again.
Nice to talk to you. What's up?
Let me give you a little background. We are a commercial real estate association, and we provide contract leases to all my members and our users of our software.
Yeah.
And we do occasionally have seminars that we charge people as we explain how the languages work on the contracts and things like that. But because of the current situation, we're trying to post videos that people can purchase that, but not allow them to share over with anybody else. Is there any suggestion, Leo?
Yeah, that's the problem. And one of the reasons, I considered very early on, we do podcasts, kind of some sort of paywall, that's what you call this. So that you have to pay to access. And yep. The reason we never did it is exactly this, especially because, you know, we're advertising to technically savvy people. They're going to immediately share those. And, I mean, you can make it harder, but it's impossible to stop. And I'll tell you why. If somebody's really determined, they can set up a camcorder, play your video on their computer, record it, and distribute that. Right? You can't stop that. There's no technological means to stop that. You know, you could sue them, I guess, but, you know, trust me, and I think anybody's ever gone to court over anything knows this is the last thing you want to do.
Exactly.
You know, it's the last resort. So, there are ways to do protected video, password protected. But if you Google it, for instance, the very first things you're going to find is, how to remove protection. I mean, it's literally before you find how to protect your videos, you find a video how to remove protection. So that's going to give you some idea. There are companies that do this, like Bright Cove. There's Star Force Player, Star-Force. There's Sprout Video. There are lots of ways to do it. But you're always going to have this. I mean, you probably already figured this out. But you're always going to have people who are just going to say, fine, that's great. I'm glad I paid my $100, and now I'm going to give it to everybody in my office or whatever, or everybody I know. Or I'm going to put it on YouTube so everybody can enjoy it. You just kind of have to live with this. This is the internet era, unfortunately. Same thing for photographers. I used to get the question. I think photographers have given up. How do I protect my photos? People keep stealing my photos. And yeah, you know, you can watermark them, you can do all sorts of things, but the criminals are always going to be more smart than the other folk. So,
yeah. And recently we did a few town hall meetings over Zoom, and you can record the video and send it to people with a password, but again, like you said, they can share that with
them. You can't really stop them. You know, even YouTube, I mean, the easiest and probably the best way to do it is to have a private, YouTube makes this very easy. We have a private URL that no one can see, and then people can pay to get the URL. And you're just going to live with, you. I don't know any way around this, you're just going to live with the fact that people will share it. You can move it around. That'll slow it down. But it's just, it's kind of the way it is. And, is why I chose, in fact, I've done this my whole career, to give away everything and just put ads in it. Right? That's the other thing. And, you know, people will skip ads, too. There's all sorts of ways. You know, you can't force somebody. Because it's digital.
Is there a way you can get people just to watch the video once and after that it disappears and they can't access it anymore?
Sure. Absolutely, there are ways to do that. Look at those that I mentioned, like Bright Cove or Sprout Video. There's all sorts of ways to do it. And that's probably the single best way to do it would be to do it once live only and have a paid stream, like pay-per-view, like boxing. Right.
Yeah.
So you say, okay, we're going to do it Tuesday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Pay $50, and you can watch it. The reason is it's not. Then somebody has to really be a dedicated criminal. they have to say, okay, I'm going to record this, which of course they take some effort because it doesn't easily record. I'm going to record this and share it, and so that'll really cut way down. If it's easy, if they get a URL and they go, well, here, let me email this to my 100 friends. That's easy. Mm-hmm. But if you do it live only. Pay-per-view, I think that's... Now, admittedly, that's less convenient for people, so you're going to reduce your audience that way. But it does... That's why pay-per-view boxing works, you know? They know people can record it. But they understand that the people who are paying for it are going to see it first, and they're going to want it first. And so that's... It's you got to do tricks like that, you know, or incentivize, or say, if you subscribe, we'll also send you a T-shirt, something you can't share, you know, if you pay... The problem is there's just no way you can stop somebody from shooting the screen saying, good, I'm going to record this, set up a camera, record the whole thing, and then give it to their friends. You just can't. There's no technological way to stop that. So you've got to think of kind of social ways to encourage payment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, remember... that's what Dig did. They did pay for early access, right? I've looked at all these because I'm curious in other ways to monetize podcasts. So Dig did that for a while where if you paid, you would get the video 2 days before everybody else. But the problem with any tech subject is those people are sophisticated enough. Immediately they were sharing it. There's no point. So really, there's two ways to do it. One is give it away and just say, hey, if you like it, you know, ask... Ultimately, in the long run, in every case, it relies on the kindness of your fans, on the value your fans place on it. That's really the key. And the truth is, I think, when you start to fight it technologically, that makes fans less predisposed to support you. It has the negative impact. They go, oh, well, Leo's trying to make money, so, you know, let's circumvent that. People love Dig Nation, right? They love Dig Nation. And if they just said, just pay us because you love us, would have worked a lot better than if, say, pay us and you get early access. They tried it, and they abandoned it pretty quickly. I think that's the right thing to do, is just say, hey, we love you. If you love us, help us. And that's what we say. That's, you know, and we even say that when we do the ads. We say, hey, if you want to support the show, use the offer code. Because honestly, for us, there are some advertisers who count, you know, they go, oh, let's see how many we got from that show. And even though I know most people just use Twit because that's, well, why are you going to, you're not going to remember the special offer code for the Tech Guy or MacBrick Weekly or whatever. You're just going to use Twit. And that usually works. And, but then we have, honestly, God, we have advertisers go, well, all the offer codes were from the Twit show from This Week in Tech. And we say, you didn't even have an ad on This Week in Tech. And they go, well, I don't understand. So you just can't win. It's time for Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru. Hello, Scott. How are you?
Hey, Leo. Doing good. How about you?
I am well.
Good.
We're discussing tuba spit valves. That's probably not a subject for a general audience.
Not for the tech guy, anyway. It's a very low-tech thing, you know. It's a little valve at the bottom of a tuba, and you open it up when you start gurgling, and it allows the condensation to run out.
So Scott is a wind instrument maven, a guru of the wind instrument. Yes. And tuba is his specialty. We were talking about that because you do tuba Christmas every year, and it probably won't do it this year. You think? I mean, maybe.
No. It's December. It's still 6 months away.
Yes. So, yeah.
Hard to know for sure.
When do you start preparing for that?
Oh, I prepare all year, but the actual event doesn't take. It's only one day.
And it's in a cemetery, so it's not like there's a lot of competition for the hall.
No, but it's indoors. It's in a hall.
It is indoors.
It's in a concert hall.
What if you did Tuba Christmas outdoors?
Well, we've done that in the past. Tuba Christmas has many, many times is done outdoors. In New York, it's done at Rockefeller Center out in front of
isn't
the
that
building.
Cool? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's freezing cold.
Yeah. And I would imagine that cold lips sink ships.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Some people who play, like in Minnesota or wherever there's, you know, it's super cold, people have plastic mouthpieces so they don't stick to their lips.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, with the last thing. Oh, my gosh. I never even thought of that.
Yeah,
like licking
terrible.
A flagpole in the winter,
yes,
you would get stuck.
Yes,
oh, my.
Exactly.
The horror. The horror.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk home theater, because that's your...
That's indeed. That's why I'm here. And I've got an email from Bob. And Bob has a Sony Bravia 65-inch TV, the X930. And he's wondering whether he should update it by spending $5,000 or $6,000 on a UST projector and screen. Remember, we were talking about UST ultra-short throw projectors last week. And he says he can probably fit about 90 inches of a screen into the space he has. And he says, I know there'll be some reduction in image quality because of spreading the same number of pixels over a larger area. But other than that, would the image quality be about the same?
You know, there's an inverse because, yes, you're spreading over a large area, but you're also sitting farther back.
Correct.
So that kind of mitigates that. That's why a 1080p screen, if you're 10 feet from it, it looks great. You don't see the pixels.
Right, exactly. And with a 4K screen, which the Sony is and which a UST projector would be that he would get, they're so close together that you wouldn't sit close enough to see the individual pixels.
If you got right up to the screen.
Exactly.
Put your nose on the screen, you might be able to see
You'd see them.
Mm-hmm. But you're not there. You're not there. Back.
The distance at which you can see pixels is much closer than the recommended distance that THX and SMPTE, the Society for Motion Picture and Television Engineers, recommend that you sit for the screen to occupy a certain angle in your field of view. Because, if you sit too close, you're craning your head and moving back and forth to see the whole screen. You can't grab it all in one image in your field of view. So these professional organizations recommend that you sit a certain distance based on the screen size so that you can see the whole thing in one view, if you will. And that is farther back for 4K in particular than you can see individual pixels or even see as much detail as is on the screen.
This is why it's an issue with these VR headsets, because your eyes are 2 inches away or less.
Yeah, or less.
From the screen. One inch. So I've even you can always see the pixels, right?
I've never seen a VR headset where I couldn't see the pixels.
Right.
And that's very distracting to me. It's not interesting. It kind of takes me out of the experience.
Yeah.
Other than the fact you got this big, heavy thing on your head.
The whole thing requires significant suspension of disbelief. You have to really throw yourself into it, you know. But that's okay.
Exactly.
Humans are quite able to do that. It's kind of amazing, you know.
It is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the larger screen is not a problem. The Sony TV that he has is an LCD TV that's edge lit, which means the LEDs that illuminate the image are along the edges of the screen. And I don't recommend that generally. So he'd have a much more uniform picture with a UST projector. It wouldn't be as bright. And so, but with a UST screen, remember we were talking last week about UST screens and the special quality they have to reject ambient light as well as reflect the light coming up from down steep below straight back out into the audience, into the viewing area. That's not really too much of a problem. Projectors, the one thing is, so the Sony probably, I haven't looked it up, probably can do Dolby Vision high dynamic range, and there is no projector that can do that. So that's one capability that you would lose by going to a UST projector.
That's interesting. Are there any HDR projectors?
Yes. Oh, yes. Most of them are, but they only do HDR10. And
Why is that?
Well, Dolby Vision is pretty specialized, and Dolby controls it very carefully.
Oh, all right.
And they want it to be on a screen that has a certain brightness.
Oh, interesting.
And TVs have that brightness, and projectors do not.
Typically don't, yeah.
Certainly don't.
Well, there must be a movie theater projector that does, right?
Well, yes, correct. Commercial cinema projector, the Dolby Cinema projector, is designed specifically for that. And it's not as bright as a high dynamic range TV. In a Dolby Cinema, you only get 100 nits, roughly, whereas a high dynamic range TV will be 1,000 nits. But the Dolby Cinema projector is specially designed to do Dolby Vision.
Right.
And projectors are less.
But they're 30,000, 50,000, 100,000.
Oh, 100,000.
Yeah.
Six figures, easy.
Yeah.
And there's two of them. That's the other interesting part. With a Dolby Cinema, you have two laser projectors.
Wow.
It's a dual projector system. And so, you know, you can't buy that for the home.
That's why there's so few of them. That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. They're very expensive.
Yeah.
So, but being that as it may, I still think that a UST projector, say the Optima P1, which was just reviewed on Projector Central very well, very highly regarded, and a UST screen, 90-inch screen, easy to get. He wants to spend $5,000 or $6,000. He wouldn't spend that much.
Oh, nice.
On that.
Well, that's less than that Hisense I
had, the
almost $10,000 with the screen.
Yeah, well, so that was one of the first on the market.
Prices
are coming down.
Yeah,
you know how technology goes.
Oh yeah,
the first one's expensive. unlike that old adage, yeah, the first hit's free, kid.
Yeah,
and the first hit's really expensive.
I'm the early adopter, so I'm always
right. You're always
spending more money. I have my that Samsung curved OLED that I bought
right
in 2013 when it was the first OLED and. Now
it looked great, but
it looked great at the time. It's 55 inches. I think it was almost $10,000. It was crazy.
Yeah, and it's 1080p. I don't think it's even
4K. Yeah, it's 1080p. I use it to watch space launches now. That's all I do.
There you go.
Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek, contributor at TechHive.com and now ProjectorCentral.com. Read his review of ultra short throw projectors there and listen to him here every week. Thank you, Scott. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back to the phones right after this. Now it's all yours, song. My friend.
Thank you so very much. So, hey, everybody. Nice to see you all. I thought I saw this. Thank you very much, Tech Dino. I appreciate that. I didn't even get to Bob's second part of his question. I may save that till next week. Although I've got a review coming up in Tech Hive next week that I might want to highlight. So I'll save this for when I don't have another topic to cover. He was asking about audio video preamp processors. He has a Lexicon, which is one of the most highly regarded that's ever been built. But it's, 6 or 7 years old. The battery's dead, the backup battery. He wants to replace it. And I've got some recommendations. But I'm going to save that for another time. Hey, Loquacious. Always great to see you. Let's see, Mick, maybe you need a 4-inch cardboard honeycomb spacer for your VR headset. Just trying to help a brother out. Thank you. I would, yes, I suppose that would help. But then the screen would be too far away for what it's designed for. One aspect of VR headsets is the field of view, the FOV. And one of the things about VR headsets that companies that make them tout is their wide FOV. And if you were to put it 4 inches out in front of you, it would be much less. The field of view would be much, much less. And so it would impact the level of immersion that you feel. You would also not see the pixels. So, you're trading one evil for another, which is the lesser of the two evils. That would be an individual thing. So let's see. Oh, MacBookie owns the Optima P1. It's excellent. Yeah, Rob Sabin at Projector Central thought the same thing. He found it to be excellent. So, MacBookie, what screen are you using? That's another good question. I think the Optima is in the $3,500 range. I'm pretty sure that's roughly where it is. And for a 90-inch screen, you'd spend less than $1,000 probably. You'd be under five grand. Well under $5,000. And this guy was talking about spending more than that. Let's see if I can remember what it was. $5,000 or $6,000. So he'd be right in the pocket there. He'd be saving a little money. So I'm happy to say that. Mike Heiss, yes, the good old days of Lexicon. Yeah, that was a great company. I don't know if are they still around, Mike? I don't even know. They for a long time they were under the Harman banner, and now that Samsung owns Harman, I don't know if they've kept Lexicon. Of course, there was that big scandal. Oh my God, Lexicon brought out a Blu-ray player. It wasn't even a UHD Blu-ray player. I don't remember now. It might have been. Anyway, it was a disc player. And it was really expensive. And somebody took it apart and found that it was an Oppo inside. Well, <that's laughs> they just funny. Rebranded an Oppo.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Yeah. And they charged like 2 or 3 times as much.
Oh, my God.
That was bad.
That's bad.
That was very bad. Oh, MacBookie has the Optima ALR screen.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go to Brad in San Diego. He's our next call. Hey, Brad.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
Very well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
Based on your first call, it sounds like this is the day of protection problems.
Okay.
Okay. So, this is a little bit convoluted, and I hope you can stick with me. Send bulk emails out to a group of people in a certain club.
Okay.
Now, some of the emails have been compromised, which I understand could have been from a printed publication. So I'm going to
wait a minute. Stop, and just explain to me a couple of things. Okay. Compromised how?
Compromised in that we are getting emails from untraceable servers or email addresses. They'll send out an email and it'll say requesting gift cards, and gee, go ahead and buy them, and it'll list like the president of the club and says, hey, I'll reimburse you once you get these. Now, what's unusual, we know they're kind of fake because the English is poor,
yeah.
and there's no return link.
Okay, you're going to have to explain more because you said you were sending out emails, some of whom are to these bogus email addresses. Is that right? In other words, you're responding to these requests?
No, somebody has compromised some of our emails recipients.
How do you know that they've been compromised? What I'm asking you. What does that mean? Is it coming from their address?
Coming from a bogus domain. So if you go to reply, you know, to that domain, because you go in to see where it's from.
Yeah. Your explanation is confusing. So I need to kind of ask you some questions.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I understand.
So you're sending out to a mailing list.
Correct.
On this mailing list are some addresses. Are these addresses of people that you believe are real people?
We know that they are real.
They're real people. Okay, fine. So you say, let's say you're sending it to leo@techguylabs.com.
Correct.
When you say it's compromised, you mean that you're getting email from that email address, purporting to be from that email address? How do you know? What does compromise mean to you?
Maybe I'm using the wrong word. Maybe it's been stolen or lifted off of a printed publication.
No. Okay. First of all, almost every email address in the world,
yes,
is known and is available to spammers on, you know, for costs of a tenth of a cent per name on lists.
Yes, I agree.
Chances are most of the email addresses that you're mailing out to have been compromised is meaningless, are being used by, who doesn't get spam? Anybody you know?
Maybe you don't.
No, everybody gets spam. I get a lot of it. Everybody does.
Oh, yeah.
So if you get spam, then your email address has been compromised in the sense that it's known to spammers.
Correct.
And the email return address from a spam email is meaningless.
Right.
You know that. They're never going to give a real address because then we just arrest them.
Right. But so with that knowledge and we're on the same track, what I'm wondering is a program like MailChimp, which I understand is more of a marketing program, but you can do mass emailings through it, I'm led to believe. Is that more protective?
No, because look, I have an email address, leo@techguylabs.com.
Right.
That email address is being used for spam.
Mm-hmm.
Not unusual. In fact, that's the way it works with most of these spam emailing programs. They go through the outbound list and randomly pick a return address from that list.
Okay.
And that's the return address on the email, and then they rotate through it. So everybody in the world not only gets spam, but gets bounce backs from spam saying, I couldn't deliver that spam you sent, because the bounce back is responding to the reply to address, which is my address, even though I didn't send it. You can send email from any address that's easily spoofed. That doesn't mean they've been compromised in any significant way. We all have been compromised in that regard. So you're saying you want to somehow go through the emails you're using and not send email to those people?
No, there's no way we cannot do that.
No, of course, because their address is still their address. That's them.
It is, sure. I just didn't know if there was a way, like, if it went through a company like, say, MailChimp, and then somebody...
What would they be looking for?
Tried to respond to that. That it would not go anywhere because it would just go to a MailChimp.
So if you sent to Leo, see, they haven't been, so you're, the term compromise implies that a bad guy has hacked my email account and is getting my email. Is that what you're saying?
I could have used the
I don't think that's the case. Everybody's email address is out there and used for spam. Compromised means, and this is what you would want to, I mean, you would want to avoid. You don't want to send email to somebody that isn't really the recipient of the email. Like if somebody hacked my account and is getting my email, you're saying I don't want to send gift cards to that person? Is that what you're saying?
Well, we just want to stop the emails.
You don't want to email to somebody not your...
We still have to email to them. It's just getting, excuse me, the fake emails.
So you're getting response emails.
We're getting them from a spammer.
Yep.
Who has got certain email addresses within the group and is sending out an email under the auspices of the president, you know, saying, oh, do this, this, and that, and then I'll reimburse you and whatever.
So, in other words, somebody's impersonating you.
Exactly.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
So, that has nothing to do with your mailing list. This is called, this is very common, phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. And phishing emails usually are malicious, often contain virus payloads. And the way they work is by impersonating somebody. So, for instance, we know now that the World Health Organization is widely being impersonated by spammers. You'll get an email that says, this is the president of the World Health Organization, and we'd like to send you, or more likely, we've attached a PDF containing information on how not to get sick, but it's not really a PDF from the World Health Organization. It's a virus.
Right.
So it's a virus itself. So there's nothing the World Health Organization can do to stop that. Zero. When I sent the one thing you can do, if but this isn't anything you could do, but the one thing I do when I send out email is I use a encrypted signature that people could use if they wish. Nobody does. But if they wanted to, they could verify that not only that email came from the real Leo Laporte, but also was unmodified. All my emails comes out over a signature like that. I doubt very many people know what they're seeing or verify it, but they could if they wanted to.
Yeah.
So to do that, you would have to say to every recipient, we're being impersonated.
Right.
Do not accept email from us unless it is digitally signed by us. I would bet your recipients aren't sophisticated enough to do that, and I doubt you would want to do that. You can't stop somebody from impersonating you.
You're 100% correct, because I've even looked at things like Hushmail and Proton and all of
those that. Those sign them, but your recipients are going to say, what do I do with this now?
That's it. Most of the people are going to say, forget it. I'm not going to do that.
So what I would suggest is an email saying, just like every other organization in the world, we are being impersonated in email. It is it's hard to explain to people who've never experienced this how widespread this is.
The biggest
attack is what we call spear phishing attacks. They come to companies and they impersonate the boss. And they say, Smithers, here's that spreadsheet. I need this back on my desk by 9 a.m. And Smithers, seeing the email came from his boss, says, and opens it. And, of course, it's not from his boss. It's a virus. So this is extremely common, and there's no way to fight it except awareness training to tell everybody on your mailing list, look, we don't send out – I don't know how you – you probably have an unsophisticated group of recipients, I'm guessing. Yeah. So this is going to, it looks like they're going to blame you, like you're doing something. You're not. And there's no way to stop it except to kind of send a note to them saying, look, this happens. Sorry. There's nothing we can do about it. And they're going to say, well, you should be able. Trust me. I've been through this. So, sorry, I had to take that break. So it's a really good question.
It's understood. I understand. Yeah, the breaks.
Yeah. And you understand why.
Oh,
there's nothing you can do. And I understand your recipients are mad at you saying, how could you let yourself be impersonated?
And I've tried to say, because I've been doing this. I mean, my first computer was an Apple II.
So, you know.
And I've gone through the whole phase. I mean, I write 6 different languages as a hobby.
Oh, fun.
That sort of thing. Yeah, well, I want to know how things work.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. But anyway, this thing has come up lately. And I've had a couple people just get really upset, like, well, you need to go through MailChimp or,
it wouldn't stop it. There's nothing you can do because it's not coming from you.
Right.
You could use MailChimp. Yeah. They act as if you. Here's a question. You say to them, do you ever get any spam, any email from, offering Viagra or contact lenses cheap or anything like that? You ever get anything like that? Well, yeah. Said, well, that's because your and everybody else in the world's email address is already well known and out there. You could change your email address. We'd be glad if you don't want to get that stuff to do that. And it'll take a little while before the spammers catch up. But it's not
like a week or two.
Yeah, but it's not coming. I think the thing to reassure them is the fact that I'm sending you email is not telling the spammers, oh, it isn't. Now, it's an interesting question. How do they know that this person is a member of your group to impersonate it?
I think somebody got hold of a publication where certain officers were listed and they put in their email addresses.
Yeah, but they would still have to know that the recipient is a member of your group.
Right, but there's other people listed in there. For example, a list of officers. Okay.
Yeah, you know, impersonating you, that's one thing, but how do they know to send it to that guy is the question. That may be your fault. That may be somehow that email list has gotten out. Do you use CCs when you send these out or blind CCs?
Blind.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's good. That means that everybody's not receiving. Somehow it's possible, and this is the thing that you would be on your shoulders, that somebody has your mailing list and is then targeting your mailing list with emails that spoof you.
Sure. Yeah.
That's a reasonable question. And then I don't know what you do. You have to figure out, well, where'd they get our mailing list?
No. And some of them, you can buy just about any club's mailing list on eBay or something.
Well, there you go. So that's possible that somebody has your – it would be – MailChimp, for instance, is very good about not – they're not going to share your mailing list with somebody else. If you're using another service that isn't as good about it, they could have sold your mailing list. That's very true. So that is something to be aware of. If it's targeting your members with emails spoofing your officers, then they have both – a list of your members and information about your officers. That's easy to get, by the way. It doesn't have to even be a publication. I could just make a phone call and say, hey, I'm trying to talk to your chief financial officer. What's his name?
That's easy to do.
But
I had to do that recently with American Airlines.
Perfect.
Getting a refund for travel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But the bigger question is how they get your mailing list. So it sounds like they may have that, in which case that's something I would try to figure out. There's nothing you can do about it at this point.
All right. Well, listen, I don't want to take any more of your time. I certainly appreciate it. And enjoy the show.
My pleasure. I always
learn something.
Thank you, Brad. I'm glad to talk to you.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks,
you too. Bye-bye.
And now, sorry, Scott, it's you again.
Hey, no problem. That's an important question.
I think it was, And it's, I'll talk a little more when I come back. But go ahead.
Yeah. So I got another 4.5 minutes here to say hi to everybody and answer some questions. Thank you, Tech Dino. Let's see. Oh, MacBookie used the Projector Central calibrated settings on the Optima P1. That's a good place to start, and probably without additional calibration, I'm sure it works fine. I will say that there are sample-to-sample variations. That is, one Optima P1 compared to a different one, the settings might be a little different because there are tolerances to the components. And so, you might set one control to +3 on one, and the best setting might be +1 on another. The differences would be relatively small usually, so it's a good place to start, and it usually works fine. He also points out that he's in the UK, and the model number of that product is different than what I said, P1. And that's very common. Most companies that make products, at least in our industry, have different model numbers for the U.S. versus Europe versus Asia. And I guess they do that to kind of track how they're selling in each country, so they have an easier time doing some geographic analysis. So I guess that's probably why they do that. Bob in CA, do I have a TiVo or a DVR? I have a DVR. I have a TiVo as well. I don't really use it much. But I have Dish Satellite, and I have a DVR on that. MacBookie says, projector looks good. Have the projector in my bedroom. Wow, 100-inch screen in your bedroom. That's pretty good. I'm sure you are enjoying it tremendously. It's a great solution. It's just not as bright. And if you don't need bright, then you're good. And I think TVs these days are pretty bright. So let's see if there's anything else I can tell you. As I said in the chat room, to Mike Heiss and anybody there, I just got an email this week that Cedia 2020 has been canceled. I'm surprised it took them this long to do it, truthfully. But it was going to be in Denver. It was going to be at the Denver, actually called the California, or no, the Colorado Convention Center, which is a giant convention center. But they're currently using it as a health facility. So Cedia could not happen there. So it's not going to happen at all. It's going to be virtual, like so many other things. And my good friend Mike Heiss is going to be doing virtual courses. He's a teacher there, and he does classes at Cedia. He's going to be doing them online this year. Next year, 2021, they have it set up for Indianapolis, which is the home city of Cedia. Cedia, for those of you who don't know, stands for Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association. So it's for custom home building, custom home theaters, which is the part I cover. But they also have other stuff, security systems, centralized vacuum systems, heating and air conditioning and ventilation, HVAC. So anything to do with custom home building is at Cedia. Custom home building and electronics, I should say. And a large part of that is home theater or audio video systems anyway. You have a lot of things distributed video and audio around the house. So that's going to not be happening this year live. I wasn't planning to go anyway, to tell you the truth. There you go.
Thank you, Scott. Stay well.
You too.
And I'll talk to you next week.
You bet.
All right. Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, space launches. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Let me just go a little farther in our conversation. I was talking with Gary about his mailing list. I think it took me a while to conceptually understand what the issue was. So I'll see if I can explain it. He has an organization that has a mailing list. He sends out to his mailing list, his members, emails. From time to time, those same members will get emails purporting to be from Gary and the crew, you know, from some officer of the organization offering them something, trying to scam them, basically. Those are obviously phony emails. Gary didn't send them. His officers didn't send them. But here's the issue. Whoever did send them, it's possible, seems to be, has his mailing list. And that's the issue. If I can, let's say I'm Mr. Hackerman, Mr. Bad Guy. If I can get your mailing list of an organization, I can easily figure out, suss out who the officers in the organization are. If I can get a sample email from you, for instance, I can spoof it. I can duplicate it. I can get your, now I've got your logo. I've got your letterhead. I've got everything. It's easy for me to make an email that looks exactly like the email you just sent, except with one exception. it's a spurious offer that perhaps is attempting to take advantage of the members. The members, they look at it, and some of them are less sophisticated, might fall for it. Maybe even if they are sophisticated, they might fall for it. That's called a spear phishing attack, a targeted phishing attack. After I talked to him a little more off the air, I think I gathered that that's the issue, is that more than one of his members has been getting an email like this. That means somehow Mr. Bad Guy Leo here, I got your email list. There are lots of ways that can happen. Here's the most concerning way, and not an unlikely scenario. How big is your mailing list? 100, 200, 500, 1,000? I would guess that maybe 0.1% of people out there has been compromised in some way. 1 in 1,000. If your mailing list has 1,000 people in it, I think there's a fairly good chance one of them has been compromised. Not you. They have been compromised. Somebody got their email password. In fact, this is not at all unusual. If I wanted to get email passwords, I would maybe go to a coffee shop and watch for passwords to float through the air. There's lots of ways to try to get somebody's email password. That, by the way, is the most valuable thing a bad guy can get. Because once I have your email password, how often do you change that? Very rarely, right? Once I can log in to your email, you will never know this. Your email will continue to go, and you'll get it and all that. But I can read it. It's like I can look over your shoulder the whole time. Now, if I've done that, there's all sorts of things I can do to you. I can try to reset your bank account, for instance. You know, because I've got your email address, I have your bank, and I could try to log into the bank with your email address, and it says, no, that's not the password. And you say, oh, I forgot it. Where does that I forgot reminder go? It goes to your email box, right? So the bad guy, Leo here, I'm reading all your email anyway. Okay, let's try this. I try to log in your bank, bad password. Send me a new email password. Bank sends an email. I'm reading it. I click the link to reset the email. Now I'm in. Now I've got your bank account. And I may even use it for other. I mean, actually, this seems like a low percentage play, but I might say, oh, look, you're a member of Organization X. I like this. I like these emails from Organization X. Let me see if I can get that mailing list. See, how would they get the mailing list, though? I asked Gary, I said, you're using blind CC, BCC, not CC, to send the mails out. Yes. Maybe the mailing list company is using doesn't have the best privacy policy. Maybe they sell your mailing list. Somehow somebody's got your mailing list. I think that's more likely than a compromise of a recipient, because the higher percentage game to play, and you hear me, I'm actually talking through this out loud. The higher percentage of game to play, if I have your email, I'm not going to try to scam people. I'm going to go right to your bank. I'm going to go right to all of your accounts and get into them one by one and try to get your money. That's the high percentage play. So that's when you get compromised, that's more likely what's going to happen. The way to avoid this, by the way, use two-factor wherever possible. Because, without that two-factor, the bad guy's going to have a hard time using a password or changing it. So that's one way to slow that bad guy down. It's tough, though, if you're an organization and somehow your mailing list is leaked out and somebody is sending mail to your membership, to that list, pretending to be you and trying to scam them. That's a tough one. At that point, it's the closing the barn door after the horse has escaped. I mean, you could try to figure out, well, how'd they get my mailing list? Maybe use a different mailing company. Maybe, who knows? There's all sorts of ways. Maybe they hacked your organization. Maybe they're sitting in your organization. Who knows? You got to figure that out. But I don't know what you can do now. You have to send out an email to everybody in the mailing list saying, look, this is happening. And now you would need a way of a code somehow that you can tell recipients, this is real, not fake. It's tough. I guess you could say that. You could say, unless you see this special seal, consider it fake. Now, if the bad guy's on your mailing list, if he's getting your email, which he might well be, he'll see that and go, okay, I could dupe that. That's why I use, by the way, that's why I use GPG to sign my emails. It's an arcane and little used system, unfortunately. You can also use S-MIME to do this, which is a little better known. If you use S-MIME, you can buy a certificate from DigiCert. There are lots of companies that sell email certificates. You'll sign your email, and then in most cases, your recipients will know if that email's legit. If it's not signed, they'll say, well, it must be from the bad guy. Because the bad guy doesn't have your secret key, your signing key, that means this email is legit. He could fake an image, and he could fake a stamp. He could fake, but he can't fake that. unless you've been so compromised, maybe he's wandering around your systems. That would be another matter entirely. It's an interesting puzzle. Maybe you have an idea. How could somebody secure their mailing list so that their members, especially if their members aren't sophisticated, could with certainty know if an email came from Gary or not? That's why I use digital signing. Most of the people who get email from me probably don't know what that means. But if they have GPG installed, which is a free open source program, it'll say this message has been signed and is guaranteed to be from Leo and unmodified. That's nice. That's nice. I even put that in my signature. I have a little link in my signature to explain what this garbage at the bottom of my email is, this PGP signature you see at the bottom of my email. And in that link, it says, I signed my mail. And if it's not signed by me, you can't trust it. You should ask for a signed copy. That seems like a lot to go through. For most organizations, that's not going to make sense. So tricky. This is a tricky one. And this really comes down to the fact that email was never intended to be secure. When it was first designed, it was designed to be easy, open. And the problem is, it's easy to spoof email, to say, I can send you email from the president of the United States, White House, you know, the president at whitehouse.gov. It's easy. There's nothing to verify that. There are systems added on after the fact that we're trying to make it better, but it, you know, it's not widespread. They're not widely understood. They're not widely used. They're not widely effective. You could see the problem. We essentially have an insecure system, and in the long run, I don't know if there's a way to fix that. That's a fascinating conundrum. But it's kind of the way a lot of the internet is, isn't it? The internet was designed, as were, by the way, our operating systems, our computers, were designed in a day, in a time when there, you know, we just didn't anticipate there'd be all this maliciousness. It's kind of sad. It was a open, more friendly, a kinder time, a better time, a time before the bad times. It didn't take long, but now the problem is all that we're entrenched. These are entrenched protocols, entrenched systems that we can't really easily change. Wish we could. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. More of your calls coming up right after this. Hey, our show today brought to you by Masterclass. I don't know how this company, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. You are learning, and what a good time to be doing this. You got a little free time as you're sheltering in place. Masterclass lets you learn from the best. You get exclusive access to online classes taught by some of the most impressive people in the world. Masters of their craft with over 75 different instructors across many categories. You know, I first started watching, I've been a Masterclass subscriber for a couple of years. My friend Steve Martin started doing a class on comedy. I'm still not funny, but I sure enjoyed watching Steve's lessons. Annie Leibovitz, the great photographer, teaching you her techniques of portrait photography. I mean, these are the best in the business. Wolfgang Puck teaching you how to cook. You can learn Mexican cooking from Gabriela Cámara. Oh, my God, I love that. That is the best class. The Art of Negotiation with Chris Voss. How about Learn How to Garden with Ron Finley? And what I love about this, these are all beautifully shot. They're really crafted beautifully. These are not, you know, dumb old YouTube videos. They are very specific. They show you how to execute a technique. They give you insights from the masters. And by the way, I think the things you learn from these can be translated across many fields and many disciplines. I'm not going to be a stand-up comic, but I think some of the insights I got from Steve Martin help me in my life day in, day out. There is literally something for everyone. In fact, I went to my son, Henry, because I thought, boy, as a young person getting started in life, It would be so great if he, you know, would take some of these classes. He wants to cook, and there's some of the best cooks in the world, the best chefs in the world are teaching at Masterclass. I said, Henry, let me get you a Masterclass subscription. He said, aren't too late. I already have one. I said, you do? He said, yeah. I think that's so awesome. I mean, the names, the people who are teaching you, the talent, it's just mind-boggling. I mean, Ron Howard teaching you how movie filmmaking works. Anna Wintour talking about fashion, the editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine. It's just mind-boggling. And it just it baffles me because I don't know how they get these brilliant, talented people to do this. I have to think, and I should ask Steve. I never asked him. But I have to think it's because they want to pay it forward. You know, they've mastered a skill. They're really good at something. You know, Marc Jacobs doing fashion. Herbie Hancock on jazz. Phil Ivey teaching you how to play poker. They are really good at their profession, and they want to pass it along. That's my only... because, you know, Neil Gaiman doesn't need to teach you his techniques of writing, except that I think he believes in passing it on. David Sedaris, Mandy in our chat room saying her favorites. David Sedaris, love him. And it's funny because I know his voice from, you know, This American Life all the time, right? So I know his voice, and his face doesn't match his voice. So, but it's fun to watch him, and then I go, oh, yeah, that's David Sedaris. Margaret Atwood? You can learn pretty much anything. It will change your life. It's an immersive learning experience. You can watch it on your phone, on the web, on your Apple TV. There's a Masterclass app. Classes on every topic under the sun, taught by literally the best known names in the field. Each one's broken down into individual lessons, so they're not so long. You can watch them and digest them. There's downloadable materials. You explore at your own pace. The lessons are like 10 to 15 minutes, so it's perfect. And you could binge them, absolutely, but you can also watch one. And I honestly, with a lot of these, especially the cooking ones, I watch one, I think about it, I try it, and then I go to the next one. But it fits the time you've got available. And with the downloadable recaps, the supplemental materials, for instance, the cooking classes come with guides that are like, basically it's a high-end cookbook. Everybody should have a Masterclass subscription. 4.7 out of 5 stars, but if you're not satisfied, of course, there's a 30-day money-back guarantee on the annual all-access pass. So take advantage of that. Try it at least for 30 days. I think this is one of the best deals and the best content I've ever seen in my life. Get unlimited access to every Masterclass. And because you're listening to Tech Guy, 15% off the annual all-access pass. Go to masterclass.com/twit. Masterclass.com/twit. It's the names. Jane Goodall talking about chimps. Doris Kearns Goodwin talking about presidents. Bobby Brown talking about makeup. It's all in there. You'll get 15% off the annual all-access pass. Masterclass.com/twit. They've added some new ones. I see Robin Roberts is on there. David Mamet. It's unbelievable. Frank Gehry, the greatest architect of our time. Amazing. Martin Scorsese, for crying out loud. We're about a minute and a half away from the launch of...
Stage 2, lock float is closed out, propellant fills are complete.
The Dragon X vehicle, SpaceX's mission to the International Dragon Space Station. The first time humans have been launched into space from the United States soil since 2011. So I'm going to leave that audio up so
all
we
fuel,
can
all oxidizer
do that together
Falcon
because
9.
I have a
One
feeling...
34 seconds to
if
go
I don't,
to launch.
nobody will be listening to the radio. Pretty exciting stuff, I have to say. And if you're into technology, I think it's not surprising that you'd be into the SpaceX launch because this is technology at its highest, right? I always talk about the fact that technology is an expression of science. It really comes down to science and the scientific method, which was essentially discovered and perfected several hundred years ago
Falcon
in the
9
Enlightenment.
Dragon is in countdown.
The notion that
STS is armed for launch.
You make a theory. You test that theory.
Under a minute now, the FTS, the flight termination system, has been armed.
You don't believe it until it's been proven so, and then you're always open to new theories. And if it weren't for science, we wouldn't have technology. And if not for technology, we wouldn't.
Let's light this candle.
We wouldn't be lighting this particular candle. It's very exciting.
T-minus 30 seconds.
It's a beautiful view. They thought it was only about a 50% chance of launch in Florida because, of course, May in Florida, a lot of overcast skies. But
stage one tanks pressing for flight.
They've been given permission to launch, and they are about to go.
10.
Doug and Bob.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition. Liftoff
of
the Falcon 9 and Crew Dragon, go NASA, go SpaceX, Godspeed, Bob and Doug.
That's pretty exciting.
America has launched.
One Alpha.
And so rises a new era of American spaceflight, and with it the ambitions of a new generation continuing the dream. 20 seconds into flight, stage one propulsion is nominal.
Plus 30 seconds into this historic mission.
It's flying not just science. This is something I think.
And Falcon 9 and look at them go.
As humans, we really need to look
Falcon
to the stars.
M1D throttle down.
To feel the
We're
hope.
Throttling down to get ready for the period of maximum dynamic pressure.
It's been a very difficult week in the U.S.
We're in the throttle bucket.
This helps.
Reports say all systems are go.
Vehicle is supersonic.
We've exceeded Mach 1 on the Falcon 9.
Well, I'll keep the video going, but I guess we have to get I have to get back to work now, but I'm glad that I'm glad we could watch
we're
that historic
back
launch.
Up to full power as we're through Max Q.
And a successful
Copy,
launch.
One Bravo.
First time in 9 years.
We heard that one Bravo call out. That's just the second abort zone that they're in. They'll continue to be on this. Until the first stage has done its job.
And it looks a little like a Tesla with those big screens.
Bob and Doug pulling about 2.3 Gs, 2.3 times the Earth's gravity, already moving at over 1,500 miles per hour.
We've heard the call out for MVAC engine chill. That's getting the MVAC engine ready to light. That'll come at about 2:44 into flight. Right now, everything continuing to look good. Next major event coming up is going to be the triple. We'll have main engine cutoff of the 9 first stage engines, stage separation, and then ignition of the second stage engine to continue to carry astronauts into orbit.
They're literally almost 5,000 miles.
Coming up in about 20 seconds.
Per hour at this point.
M1D throttle down.
58 miles high. And what a view from space. It's great that we have these cameras now that we can see.
Merlin engines on the first stage.
What it looks like as it's happening, including pictures inside the capsule.
And we have Miko.
Miko.
2 Alpha.
Falcon stage separation confirmed.
Copy 2 Alpha.
You can hear the crew at NASA cheering, of course. The successful separation of the launch stage.
All right, we have stage separation confirmed. The first stage beginning its flight back. The second stage being powered by that single Merlin 1D vacuum engine has ignited and is now carrying Bob and Doug into orbit.
So quickly they get up there. So fast, almost 7,000 miles an hour now. Isn't that exciting? And I have to say, this is the first launch that really looks like a 21st century launch. They really made it beautiful. Beautiful craft, great visuals, big screens in front of the astronauts, Doug and Bob. Those look like 27, 30-inch screens in front of them. There's three of them. It makes a lot of sense, really. It's so clean and so high quality. It's so professional. It probably lends some ammunition to the people who say, oh, they're faking it. It's just too good. It couldn't possibly be that good. But you know what? They're not. And it's real. And it's probably the height of
technology, and you know that's what we talk about. We will get back to the phones in just a little bit. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm glad we could share that launch together. That was a lot of fun. Thank you to NASA TV for letting us rebroadcast that. And we're going to go do a little traveling. Not quite into space. Probably not even until another country. But we're going to go a little traveling with our traveling man, Johnny Jett. He's here. Boy, this is real travel. Travel into space. We'll be talking with Johnny in just a little bit. And then we will get back to talking tech. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Light. Bob and Doug flying at more than 5,600 miles
Dragon
per hour.
Dragon SpaceX nominal trajectory.
Already almost 200 miles downrange from the Kennedy Space Center. Nominal trajectory continuing.
He's been everywhere. Hasn't been in space yet, but who knows? With Johnny Jett, I wouldn't be surprised. It's time for our travel guy, Johnny Jett, joins us every week at this time to talk about something we haven't been able to do for the last couple of months. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, Leo. And listen, I am happy to either, you know, postpone mine so you can keep covering this, or I can add some color commentary.
No. We're just watching the, I don't know if you just saw it, but the amazing return of the launch engines. I just think that's so incredible that they're able to bring those back intact and they land themselves. You know, one of the things I was talking about as we were watching the launch of Dragon X is that this is really, oh, there's a little dragon in the floating around in the capsule in the zero G. This is really the height of technology. This is a culmination of a variety of different technologies. We owe a lot to the space program for the technologies we use every day. I have a picture on my wall at home of the original Apollo 11 computer, the computer that landed humans on the moon the first time. And it's an extraordinarily primitive device compared to the computers that they're using today and we use even today in our pockets. We've come a long way, and it's really interesting to see technology in its fullest expression to do something so difficult to launch human beings safely into Earth orbit and then to bring them back safely. It's remarkable. I look forward to the day that we are traveling to the moon and beyond. That will be travel. That'll be the day, huh?
So, it will be. And you know what? There's an app, the Apollo's Moonshot app. It's a large app, so it takes up a lot of space, but it's really cool. You can, it's AR. I freaked my son out recently where, you know, I launched a rocket in our living room. And he's doing a triple take going, "How'd you do that?"
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah, he'll be growing up in the world of augmented and virtual reality. I think probably it won't be too long before you'll be able to watch these launches in a virtual reality headset. You'll feel like you're actually in the capsule, right?
So, I mean, that was pretty just amazing right now, seeing the astronauts' view of their dashboard. I mean, these guys, I just can't imagine what their stomachs were like, you know, 30 seconds before, 2 minutes before, and then boom.
Yep.
I mean, they're traveling more miles than I ever have in a couple hours than I'd have in a lifetime.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, that's a good point. This is the ultimate travel. So, Johnny,
they're over Ireland. They're over Ireland right now.
Yeah, that was fast. That was fast. They're also in zero G's now, which is have you ever done the those space planes, they call them the vomit comet because it makes
yes.
people nauseous. Have you ever done that?
No, I have not done it, but I've been meaning to talk about it because I had it in my notes. I don't think I ever got to it around January because they released a schedule. We might have talked about it briefly, but in January, the zero gravity, they were having a whole tour around the country where you could go up. It's like, I think it's $5,000 and you only get about 30 seconds of,
Yeah. Cause the way they're really, it's not, you're not going into space. What you're doing is you're going straight up and then straight down a parabolic flight in the airplane. And so you simulate zero gravity for half a minute. Pretty cool, but very expensive. I thought that was the kind of thing you might have tried in your.
No, I'm not really into that one.
I know people have done it. It is both exhilarating and nauseating. So,
There you have it.
Yeah. So I wonder what happened to their tour. I mean, I assume it got all.
Well, I have to think they're, you know, you're not doing a lot of this stuff. So this is probably a great app, the AR app that lets you simulate life in space as an astronaut. At least we can travel to the skies virtually, if not not yet, really. Would you, if, you know, yeah. if they eventually, God, I think I'm not going to make it. You know, I always dreamed that someday I would get to go to space. And I was hoping there'd be a space hotel on the moon or on Mars that I could visit. You're a little younger than me. Do you think you'd ever get a chance to do that? Would you do it if you could?
You know, I wouldn't be the first, you know, especially with little kids. But I did go. I was at the spaceport in New Mexico when they did their first launch with Richard Branson. I was filming a Travel Channel TV show. This is 2011. And, you know, I got to get close to the rocket. I didn't get to go inside it. They wouldn't let anyone inside it, but I interviewed Richard right outside of it, and I met the astronauts. And, you know, just the whole spaceport was just incredible. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and just the whole thing was remarkable, and just to see that thing take off.
Well, the other thing that's really interesting to me about this is a huge success for SpaceX, for Elon Musk's SpaceX, and for civilian flight. Commercial flight. I mean, to be the, you know, the last launch was a NASA launch. This is, of course, with the help of NASA from a NASA space pad and everything, the launch pad. But it's still a SpaceX endeavor. Now the astronauts are removing their helmets. They are in zero G and they are in an environmentally controlled capsule, which is, by the way, pristine. Look how clean that capsule is. That is a clean capsule. Boy, it looks like it's molded plastic too. It's very, it's so different from the Apollo and even space shuttle cabins, which were laden with gear and dials and switches and so forth. Look at the big curved screens, all of the professionals that NASA have. And really, this doesn't even look like the NASA, you know, the Houston Space Center, because it's modern. It's high tech. These are computer screens, you know. It's pretty amazing.
Have you done the tour of the
No, we talked about that Center? Because they've renovated it, right? And they made it look exactly as it did during Apollo 11, which is pretty cool. I'd love to see
it. I did it a few months ago. Actually, it was last August.
Right.
I had an astronaut give me a tour. It's really something to see. I was so happy to do it. If you have a chance, definitely get down to it's right outside Orlando. And we took a private flight and we got to land on the same runway as where these astronauts, I assume, will be landing when they do come back. Although they're going up to the space station for a while, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know. This isn't like a shuttle anymore. They don't land like a plane. I'm not sure
right.
how they re-enter.
But the space shuttle used to land there, and they had the space shuttle right there. Yeah. And these guys are going to the space station for I don't know how long.
Yeah, they don't know how long. I think that's TBD right now.
But there's one person up there now, and these two are going to go up there.
So
what was interesting is that they were hanging out, and they're in their same room as the others. I was worried about what if they bring up COVID up there.
Careful to quarantine those guys. And you noticed that even though the astronauts themselves weren't wearing masks, everybody around them was wearing masks because, of course, they don't want to contaminate the astronauts. But I think there are extreme measures taken to make sure that the astronauts themselves are virus free before they go up there. You're absolutely right. The last thing you'd want to do is bring our troubles on Earth up to space. That's certainly not on the agenda. Well, Johnny Jett, if you go to johnnyjett.com, you'll find his postings about that NASA AR app, which is really cool. He's also got a new podcast at anchor.fm/Johnny Jett, where he talks with travel folk about the good old days.
Yeah, we mentioned you this week. Actually, I interviewed Amber Mack a couple days ago.
Oh, that's so cool.
And she brought you up, and I also just interviewed – I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
And I interviewed one of my friends just flew to Australia. So we talked about what it's like going to Australia, the quarantine. It's on the podcast.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. And then, of course, youtube.com/Johnny Jett for the videos. And is there any ETA for the return to travel? You know, the world is starting to get back to normal a little bit. Are cruise lines and airlines starting to start up with recreational
travel? Airlines, yes.
Travel?
Cruises, no. I mean, they keep pushing the cruises. Canada just said they're not going to have cruises until end of August. I think the U.S. is going to follow. We'll see. Right now, the no-sail order is like June something. Hawaii just extended theirs to the end of June, so there's no Hawaii. Off.
Johnny Jett, yes. It's a pleasure.
You too.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, I'm glad we could watch that together. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
that's travel. It's a very special kind.
That's ultimate travel.
That's the ultimate travel. Really amazing. Really amazing. Yeah, they're going to be up there for 1 to 3 months. It's weird. It's an open-ended visit.
1 to 3 months.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or longer. They're prepared for, they could be there as long as, I can't remember, I thought it was like something like 253 days.
Wow.
So it just depends. I'm not sure what it depends on, to be honest. I guess it depends on the next mission.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I don't think they land. I know they don't land anymore because it's not ballistic. It's not, they don't have wings. I imagine they come in as in the old days with a parachute and they land in the sea for recovery. I would think that's how they land these days, but I don't know. The Russians land on land with parachutes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. On line one, very patient, Stan, our Hawaii cop. Hi, Stan.
Hey, Leo.
Thanks for hanging on.
I can beat you on one thing. I remember Alan Shepard, the Redstone rocket in the suborbital, first one.
The very first one. That was a long time. What was that, 62? I think it was 62.
Yeah. Hey, I got an update for you on the over-the-air.
Yes.
You're going to like this. Remember last time I talked to you that I was channel master, I was upset because they weren't making anything anymore.
Right.
Well, they have teamed up with your old favorite, TiVo.
Oh, really?
And they now have a new one called the TiVo Edge, and it records 4 shows at one time. It has a commercial skip in it, and it's got a 2 terabyte hard drive on board with 300 hours of recording time.
Now, do you like it?
Well, I haven't got it. It just came out.
I'm so nervous about buying any more TiVos. I had TiVo's very expensive because not only do you buy the box, then you have to buy the channel guide, and you either pay monthly or you do what I do, which was a mistake, buy a lifetime membership.
Yeah.
I did that with my TiVo Bolt, and then it died. And, that's the lifetime of that device, not your lifetime. Yeah. So this is $400 for the Edge, but TiVo's been offering deals, so you might shop around. They've been offering some deals during this.
That is the deal. It's $249 right now, and it's going to go to $349 when the
– Oh, that's a good – $249 is not bad. And then how much for the yearly fee?
I don't know because I know the Tableau. We talked about the Tableau, and that's $20 a year for the commercial skip.
Yeah.
And I think they charge $5 for the guide, which is one of the best out there.
Yeah. So I'm looking right now at the website, and I would be doing the one with cable. You want to do it over the air, so that's a little less expensive. I have a cable card from Comcast. This is something they were required to do by the FCC, but they do kind of less than willingly. You have to actually really beg them. But once you get it,
yeah,
it replaces the Comcast set-top box with a TiVo. The cost for the TiVo Edge for cable is $400, and then $14.99 a month for the service plan, or you can go all in for $550. It's not inexpensive. Yeah. But if it lasted a few years, and I do have a hole in my cabinet where I had my old TiVo when that died.
Yeah.
So I'm
This is strictly OTA.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to go OTA.
And all you got to do is convince Lisa to put up a little outside antenna, and you can get it, I promise you.
I don't know. It. I'm pretty far from the towers. We're about 50 miles north of Mount Sutro. The Sutro Tower, rather, which is where all the San Francisco stations are.
Yeah.
I guess if I could get an antenna, one of those on a big mast going straight up.
No, you don't need it. You don't need it. The one I've got is about 3 foot by 3 foot square, and it's a 45-mile antenna. I get it from Seattle, which is 30, almost 40 miles away, and crystal clear HD, perfect.
Nice.
I swear you could. Leo, before we go, I got one more thing for you.
Yes, Dan.
I have been using the Flowbee for 35 years, and the Flowbee is outstanding.
We were talking about haircuts, and I was getting pretty shaggy. I finally bit the bullet. I talked to my hair cutter, and she said, well, I can wear a mask. You wear a mask. We'll sit outside. I said, all right, I can't take it anymore. I don't know. It seems a little risky. I did it. My hair is normal now, but it's not going to be normal for very long.
I hear you.
I don't know what to do. A Flowbee, huh? Now, that's a vacuum cleaner attached to clippers, right?
It's kind of a clipper thing. The blades go back and forth, and they vacuum suck your hair up in it, and there's adjustments on the how long you want it. I've been using it since the 80s, and it is outstanding. I've never,
Stan, how fashionable are you?
Well, my hair is probably a little bit shorter than yours, but it doesn't matter. Even females can use the Flowbee, and they have a long extension that sucks the hair up in there and cuts it off to the length they want it.
It's funny. Here we are watching 21st Technology with the Dragon X and talking about, I think it must be 1965 technology with the Flowbee. It's still around, though, right?
It's still, you know what's crazy about it? As soon as the COVID-19 started,
it suddenly,
I wanted to contact Flowbee, and I was going to say, this is the perfect time for you guys to be doing advertising. And all I got was, we are shut down for the
You know, sometimes people just don't know what the opportunity lies, man.
Oh, it would have been perfect. It would have sold a million of them.
Stan, it's a pleasure. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Good talking to you.
All right. And I'm glad you got it working. And now I'm going to look at this TiVo Edge because you know, and I'm going to go to, and I would recommend anybody who's interested do this. I'm going to go to a website called TV Fool. You enter TVFool.com. You enter in your address, and it tells you what you can see. Let's see what channels you can see, and how much of an antenna you would have to see that, and where those antennas would have to be aimed. Now, I'm looking. It doesn't look like I'm in the green zone or even the yellow zone. Looks like I'm kind of in the red zone. The red zone would be a roof-mounted antenna. And, hey, at least I could do it with an antenna. TV Fool's, I'm going to have to spend some time looking at this report because it's a fairly complicated report. But, yeah, you know, that's the best. Right now, that's the best deal in television, you know, because it's free over there. It's the best quality. The high def quality is better than anything on satellite or cable. It's still compressed, but relatively uncompressed. It's pretty good. Line 4, Rick in North Hollywood, California. Hi, Rick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I would like to back up my photos from my PC. It's getting kind of full. So I had a drive, and it had a Pro Tools session on it that I didn't need anymore, and it was done on a Mac.
Sure.
So I looked on the Apple website to format it for a PC, and I went through the procedures listed, and now my Mac won't see it anymore. It
says, no. So you can use the disk utility on the Macintosh. It's in the Applications Utility folder and format a drive in a number of different ways. Apple has two different file systems, APFS and HFS. HFS is the old one. But you'll notice on there you can format for NTFS, which is the Windows file system, NT file system, or, and this is the one you want, something called EXFAT, E-X-F-A-T. EXFAT can be read and written to by both Mac and Windows. It's kind of a lingua franca for hard drive formats. You'll also have the choice to choose between Master Boot Record or GPT style. For ultimate compatibility, choose MBR, not GPT. But you may, on bigger drives, have to use GPT. That's fine. But if you have a choice and both work, I would use MBR. So,
well, my Mac won't see it now, and my PC doesn't even acknowledge it.
You might want to try formatting it again. Do it with EXFAT. You haven't put anything on it. The other choice is if you did NTFS, the PC wrote to it, and you didn't want to redo it, you can. There are utilities for the Mac. There's free utilities and there's paid utilities. Paragon has a paid utility that lets the Mac read and write to Windows folders. But there's also a free one called Fuse that's open source you can use. And that'll teach the Mac how to read and write NTFS format. But honestly, I format almost everything now XFAT, E-X-F-A-T, because it works with, because I use Windows, Mac, and Linux, and it works with all three. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, macOS can read NTFS, but it can't write it. Unless they've changed that. It's actually a really good question. I should answer that on Hands on Mac because that's universal. So you formatted it, but you can't even see it now on the PC either, huh?
I can't see it on the PC, and then my Mac can't read it.
So. Yeah, I wonder if it just got corrupted or damaged. I would try writing, you know, doing it again.
And then I did get a message that there were no partitions on the drive.
Yeah. So maybe what you did, okay, so maybe you partitioned it, you set it up as an NTFS disk, but you didn't format it. So you have to do both. You have to say, this is an NTFS disk, and now erase it, format it.
There was something about FAT32 or something like that.
Don't do FAT32. That's the, that's really pretty old. I guess it would work. XFAT is kind of like FAT32, but it's a little more modern.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would just redo it and make sure. So you partition it. You say it's a MBR disk XFAT, and then you have to also format it. There's two different commands involved. And I suspect you just didn't.
And so, do you think that by using the utility on the
sure.
Mac that I can see it?
Yeah, well, I do that all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
You could do it on the you can do it on Windows machine as well, but then you're going to make an NTFS disk that would require. Fuse on the Mac or some program on the Mac.
I want to back up. I want to use it ultimately on my PC. So, I had one more question, and that is when I plug my iPhone into my Mac, it's a iMac, it only sees some of the photos. Some of them are grayed out.
Interesting.
And then some of the ones that it shows an image of, it will not load them.
That's interesting. That doesn't sound good.
It's an iPhone 7S, and Best Buy put my I had an Android, and they put my Android photos on there. A lot of those Android photos will go on to the Mac, but a lot of what I've shot on the Mac, it's really weird. It's random. Some movies will go on to the Mac. You know, I can see a lot of files on there, and then I'll group them and say, you know, upload these. And some of them will come back. It'll say that you can't. Some of them were not that it couldn't, you know, load them. So that's I don't know. That's another mystery I'll have to figure out, I guess.
I wonder. You're not using Google Photos to erase or anything like that?
No.
Okay, because Google Photos has a feature where you back it up to Google Photos, and then it says, "And by the way, I can erase all the things that are already backed up." It's kind of like iCloud's photo, you know, iCloud, Apple's iCloud photo system.
Do you think if I paid for iCloud storage and uploaded from my phone, then I could load them onto my Mac?
Well, I wouldn't say so. It sounds like they're damaged somehow.
Okay.
But you could try it. You don't have to pay for it. You get 5 gigabytes, so you could just start uploading and see if some of them start appearing. If they appear on the web, then yeah, you're golden. You never used iCloud photo?
I never did.
Okay. I would, before you do anything, log into your iCloud account on the web.
Uh-huh.
Go to Photos. See if anything's there.
Okay.
And if it's not, you get 5 gigs, which is enough to start. And just turn on the iCloud backup and see. Maybe iCloud backup would, you're right, that's like kind of like your last resort. What are you looking at those photos with? iTunes?
I can use them and play them and look at them on my phone, no problem.
Oh, they're there on your phone. And what are you, okay, and when you connect to a computer, what are you looking at them with?
I was just using iPhoto.
iPhoto.
I tried uploading them onto my PC.
What version of Mac OS are you using?
Well, it's a little older one.
I know what's going on.
It's like from 2013.
Yeah, I know what's going on. So Apple has a format called HEIC. It started using, and your
iPhotos can't read it. You got an old version of iPhotos. Apple's abandoned that now, uses something called Photos, no I. But okay. You need a more modern operating system. I don't know. Is there a reason you haven't updated? Can you not update?
Because it's a Pro Tools computer.
Oh.
Some things will quit.
Of course not. Yes. So there you go. Yeah. Okay. So the answer is, if you can see them and you can on your phone, it's because both the video and the stills were recorded in a format that the old operating system, the old iPhotos, can't understand. If you back them up to iCloud, you'd have the same problem with iPhotos, but other programs can understand it. More and more programs, because HEIF, the high efficiency image format, is a standard. It's not an Apple-only thing. So Apple's not recording them in some bizarre standard. It's just a new standard, and it's taking a while. But lots of photo programs now understand these high-efficiency formats.
Okay.
So right. It's just your old iPhotos that doesn't see it.
Okay. Because I used to be able to upload it onto my laptop, and for some reason now it always shows an error when I try to upload. And it got to where when I would restart my phone and I would restart my laptop, sometimes I could get them to go over, but I haven't had any luck doing that.
Yeah, it's really because you have such an old operating system. You're a musician?
Okay. Yes.
That's neat. Anybody famous?
No, not yet.
But you're working on it, and you do your own producing.
Instead of playing golf, I play music.
I think that's awesome. And Pro Tools, huh? Yeah, you might want to at some point go get a little more modern with the software, and then you could get a little more modern with the operating system.
Okay.
Apple's Logic that they just put out, $200. Wow.
A lot of people use Logic.
It's getting better and better and better and better. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I went with Pro Tools because it's more universal.
Oh, it's industry standard. Absolutely, yeah.
A lot of people are using Logic, I know.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much.
Hey, it's a pleasure talking to you. Thanks, Rick. Thank you. Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, feeling much cheered up by the successful launch by SpaceX of their Dragon X crew capsule with two astronauts on its way to the International Space Station. We watched it together last hour. Very happy. It's been such a difficult week, hasn't it? So hard. And so it's just, the pandemic and the tragedy in Minneapolis and then the rioting. It's just been so hard. It's nice to look to the skies once in a while and go, yeah, there's hope. Maybe. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Technology gives us a lot of things. Sometimes it gives us bad things. Sometimes it gives us good things. But ultimately, I think it's hopeful, isn't it? It's hopeful. Sometimes we technologists, people who love technology, who deal in technology, who work in technology companies, sometimes we perhaps overvalue technology. We think it can solve all problems. You see that sometimes at Google and Apple and Microsoft. Google and Apple, I think they pitched in. They said, we're going to make a what they call a programming interface, an API, so that health officials can create contact tracing apps for the iPhone and Android devices. And they did something that was really, really well done, very clever. But there was one little problem. And this is really an example of how technology does what technology can do, especially if they can do it easily. But even if not, they do what technology can do. But sometimes maybe they miss the larger picture. In this case, they knew that people wanted privacy. That's a big issue on our phones these days. And we especially don't want government to get information off our phones, or for that matter, marketing to get information from our phones. We want to be private on our phones. So Google and Apple used their very bestest, smartest stuff. They used their noggins and came up with a system that was beautifully, elegantly private. But the problem was, it was beautifully, elegantly private. Maybe if they'd spoken to health officials a little more, they might have realized that it's not going to work. And in fact, right now, there's only four states that have said, yeah, we're going to use that. I think Latvia is using it. There are a few countries, but most countries are saying, here's the problem. I could create a health app that would use this really cool private technology on the phone. The way it works is it just kind of, as you walk around, your phone doesn't send this back to the home office, by the way. It just, it keeps track of all the places you've been as you walk around and all the people you've seen. Well, and this is part of the problem, all the people you've seen running an app. And it just says, and it doesn't keep track of their name or anything. It just says, okay, I got it. Here's a unique identifier. You ran into this person, you ran into this person, you ran into this person. And it just keeps a log. And all of this trigger, all this becomes useful if you test positive for the virus. Then you tell this special app, you have, probably have a QR code your health provider gives you or something, but you tell this special app in some way that's secure, I have it. Please tell everybody I ran into over the last 2 weeks to quarantine, to get tested in a quarantine, because I've run into them and they may have gotten it. It doesn't know their names. You don't know their names. They don't know your name. No names are exchanged. So everybody you ran into over the last 2 weeks will get a notification on their phone if they're running the app. They have to be running an app that's compatible that says, you have run into somebody who had COVID-19, quarantine for 2 weeks. There's a number of issues with this. What does run into mean? If you're on a subway train and you go by the station, you're within 5 feet as you go by the station of somebody who has test positive. Did you have contact with them? Well, it's very unlikely, in fact, impossible that you got any germs, but you did have, the phone will say you ran into them. It doesn't know. So knowing that, people are going to say, well, should you quarantine 14 days because it might be somebody you drove by? I don't know. Plus, everybody, for this to work, everybody has to be using the app. If you go to the grocery store, you're using the app. And the app says, no, you didn't run into anybody that had the virus. Does it mean you didn't? No. What it really means is you didn't run into anybody using this app who has the virus. But since not 100% of people, in fact, in Singapore where they have similar apps, only 20% of people use that app. There's no, you don't know you didn't contact anybody. It's not, it's useless, in other words. It's useless. And the health officials in most states and localities and countries say, well, if you were to give us, you know, if you were to use this app, you know, like to tell, and you came down with it, then a human contact tracer could then say, well, tell me all the places you've been. Yeah, but spit that out. And then you could then the human contact tracer say, well, tell me all the other people you might have run into. They'd write that down. And they go, and then this is what you have to do. You have to go to everybody and say, hey, did you have contact with Leo? Because he has it. And then if they say yes, they say, okay, good. We need to know everybody you came into contact with. And that's what human contact tracing does. But the phone doesn't give them that information. It doesn't give them any information. Because Silicon Valley says, well, we know you want to be private. Health officials say, well, you should have asked us because now we have an app that's useless. There's no point. There's no point. If the problem is, in order for this contact tracing to work, we have to invade people's privacy. We just do. And that's true. It's true. So this is, and, you know, look, I love technology, but this is the kind of the short-sightedness of Silicon Valley. We solve problems we know how to solve. We solve problems we can solve. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's a problem anybody wants to have solved. And we can point to a lot of things in this world. 3D television sets, for instance. Nobody wanted, but we made them anyway. We were hoping somebody might want them. Folding phones. Nobody really wants those, no. We were hoping somebody might want them, but, you know, no, nobody seems to. There's a long, long road littered with technologies that never went anywhere because we could invent them. We did invent them. Nobody seemed to want them. But I guess that's how it works, isn't it? Occasionally, and all you need to do is come up with one occasionally, like Apple did with the iPhone. You come up with something that's so incredibly popular that it transforms everything. If it weren't for the iPhone coming out in 2007, we'd still be using BlackBerries, kids. And, you know, Android, the Android guys
saw the iPhone and they said, stop. We're going down the bad, because they were doing something more like a BlackBerry. We're going down a bad road. And they started over. They said, we're going to make something that looks more like an iPhone. Clearly, Apple's licked this. Clearly, Apple's solved it. So that's the world we live in. And occasionally you get the technology hit that sends you to the moon, or at least the International Space Station. And occasionally you get a non-starter. You know, one of the non-starters possibly right now seems to be self-driving vehicles. The pandemic has kind of brought to the fore the fact that a lot of these companies going out of business. A lot of the development was being done for self-driving taxis, Ubers, and Lyfts. Because, well, here's an interesting story. Uber, which has raised billions of dollars, has spent billions of dollars, makes no financial sense. None at all if humans have to drive the cars. They can't make money with human drivers. They lose money. They lose 40 cents on every mile they drive. Or every ride, I guess it is. 40 cents on every ride. 40%, I'm sorry, of every ride is subsidized by the company. So why would you start a company that loses money on every ride? Well, because they figured someday we're going to have cars that drive themselves. And if you take the driver out of the equation, profit. But then the virus hit, and Uber and Lyft and all the ride sharing companies basically shut down. And all the money they were pouring into the creation of self-driving vehicles basically shut down. You know, we'll talk about that tomorrow with Sam, our car guy. At least in the short term, doesn't look too good for either self-driving vehicles or ride sharing. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's why I love watching technology. It's fascinating. It's a perfect example of humans' desire to create, to invent, to change the world. And their willingness, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but their willingness to take a big risk, to take a chance. I love that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls, more tech talk coming up right after this. Our Tech Guy Show brought to you, as it has been for years, by my favorite printer in the world, Epson. I love these guys. If you're tired, and who isn't, of expensive toner cartridges, meet the Epson EcoTank Pro. No cartridge. It's designed for quality, speed, and convenience, but also value. And you can print like a pro. EcoTank Pro, it's Epson's fastest super tank printers. Designed for high-volume, heavy-duty performance for businesses. They're cartridge-free, but they do come with, and I love this, super-sized, easy-to-fill ink tanks. Using low-cost replacement ink bottles, zero cartridge waste, no more in the landfill, and there's enough ink for thousands of pages. Thousands of pages. And that when you get more, the cost's so low, you can print all you want in color. You won't be, I don't know about you, but I used to think, oh, how much a page is this costing me? Not with the Epson EcoTank Pro. Printing in black and white to save on toner replacement cartridge costs, they're a thing of the past, because EcoTank Pro is just changing the way people print. Forget about having to replace cartridges between print jobs ever again. Plus, with Precision Core heat-free technology, you get fast print shop quality output, crisp, vibrant results. You're going to love how it looks, and the color is beautiful. The Epson EcoTank Pro is also available in wide format. You can go up to 13 by 19 inches. That's really great. Print like a pro from your home office or small business. Add the Epson EcoTank Pro to your online shopping list at Best Buy, Office Depot, Office Max, Staples, and, of course, Epson.com/EcoTank Pro Leo. EPSON, Epson.com/EcoTank Pro
Leo. I love my Epson EcoTank. You will too. Epson, exceed your vision. Okay, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Line 3, Barb in Rancho Mirage, California. Hi, Barb.
Hello.
Thanks for hanging on.
This is my third call. I've gotten dropped twice.
Oh, no. Well, I'm glad you got back. What can I do for you?
Persistence.
Yes.
I have got a problem. I have a Chromebook and a Windows computer.
You are blessed with an embarrassment of riches.
Well, I love the Chromebook better than the Windows.
Oh, you also have extremely good taste.
Oh, I love my Chromebook.
Yeah. You're safer. Right. It's better. It's more less likely to get damaged. I think it's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I use it. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm more than I am my Windows now.
Nice.
But what has happened is all of a sudden after, I don't know, it takes quite a few days, but then all of a sudden, you know, I'll go to, say I go to Facebook or whatever, and I want to scroll, you know, start scrolling down. Well, it won't let me scroll up. It goes, you know, like it's stuck. And then I go to the search bar and click, you know, and the line just goes flying left to right.
What's going on? And it does it on both computers?
Both.
Okay. And well, that's just weird. I don't know what's going on.
Well, you know, I installed ExpressVPN.
Oh.
And I'm thinking back like...
Well, try... It's not just installing it, especially in the... Chromebook's not going to do anything. It's only when you're running it. If you're not running it and it's still happening, I wouldn't blame that.
Yeah.
So, Windows is Facebook is acting weird. Is anything else acting weird?
Oh, yeah. It'll be my email, anything I go to. It won't let me. It's every one of them. You know, stuck.
Okay, so one thing you can try, and this is one of the reasons I love Chromebooks, is the Power Wash. Do you know about Power Wash?
Well, that erases everything.
Yeah. What do you have on your Chromebook?
I've downloaded some stuff.
Save that stuff off. I mean, really, the whole idea of a Chromebook, the reason they come with such small hard drives, relatively, is everything should be in the cloud. And the beauty of that is, you know, either stored on Google Drive or, you know, part of your account. Beauty of that is you power wash it, log in, everything's back.
Okay.
So if you do have some things you downloaded, you know, screenshots, sometimes people do screenshots, some files that you downloaded, just get a USB key or something and copy that off.
Okay.
It's only a few places it could be. Mostly it would be in the downloads folder. And then do a power wash, which you could do from the settings. And if it comes back, then it's not ExpressVPN, and it's not the computer. It's some. I don't know what it would be. I'm not quite sure what's going on.
I didn't know if it'd be the router. That's the only thing
I don't think it's the router either. And so so it's not just Facebook. If you go to any other site, what does it look like? What happens? It scrolls. You can scroll down, but not up.
Yeah, it just automatically scrolls me down.
Oh, it does it.
I can't.
Oh, I think you have some schmutz in your fremits. You got some schmutz in there. But it's weird that it would happen to both your Chromebook. You're not using the same mouse on both the Chromebook and the Windows, are you?
No, I have two separate mouse.
It's weird. But maybe, you know, lately we're all home a lot more. I like to have a little chicken sandwiches while I'm working, and sometimes some schmutz gets on the... It sounds like, honestly, it could be a hardware issue where the trackpad has some schmutz on it. Is the Windows machine a laptop or a desktop?
Laptop.
And so you're not using a mouse on either, using the trackpad?
No, I'm using a mouse on both of them.
Oh, you are?
Yes. But two separate.
You're not sharing the mouses.
No.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds. I mean, it sounds like more like there's the mouse, like the scroll wheel or something is stuck or something weird. You reboot from time to time, I'm sure, right?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I'm forced to do it when it does that. I turn it off and then turn it back.
Oh, does
on
that fix it?
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah, it'll be maybe a week.
And then it comes back.
Yeah.
What the what?
I know it.
Well, then we know it's not schmutz in the mouse, because schmutz in the mouse or chicken in your mice, that's not going to go away when you reboot and come back a week later. That's going to be there all the time. So it does sound like a software issue, rebooting and then it comes back. Boy, I don't know.
I mean, the fact that it's both of them, that's what's so weird.
Yes, it's very weird.
It was just one or the other, but then I'm...
Now, do you use Chrome on your Windows machine, too, the Chrome browser?
No.
You do not? So it's not an extension you installed on Chrome?
Well, Chrome's there, but I don't use it.
Yeah. I don't... You know, you stumped me. Maybe somebody listening in our audience can call in and say what it is, or our chat room. I don't know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How could that happen? Both of them are... I had to take a break. Sorry about that, yeah. Barb. Both of them are doing it.
Yeah. It's like someone takes over my computer.
Yeah, but it's not that.
And I'm like, what are you doing?
And what it's the same thing as if you spin the scroll wheel and just spin it and kept spinning and everything just scrolls down. It's kind of like that, right?
Yeah. And then if I click into the search bar, you know, and get the blinker going, it just goes all by itself, all the way right to left, or left to right.
Okay, yeah, so that's a bad keyboard or bad mouse or both.
Okay.
It seems unlikely that it would happen to both laptops, but maybe it did. Those are stuck keys. In fact, maybe they're both stuck keys. I don't think it's software, but wait a minute. Why would it go away when you reboot?
Exactly. That was going to be my next comment. It comes back, and I have no problem at all. So I don't know. Maybe am I leaving it on too long?
Nah. So the chat room's saying, you know what? If you tap the space bar, it'll scroll down. And if you put if the space bar were stuck, it would have this effect that when you clicked in a text field, it would go brrr, with blank thing. In fact, I could actually demonstrate it. And this would work in either browser.
I'm talking about the search bar.
Any bar, any text bar. Yeah. So if I put my, if I go to a page and I put my mouse in and just space bar, it's going to go across. Similarly, if I go to a web page, it scrolls it all the way down. That's because from hitting the space bar. So if you had, it sounds like you've got stuck space bars on both machines. It does not lie. You've not been hacked. I promise you it's not that.
I was afraid to call you. I told her. I said, I'm
no, you're not hacked. That's not that. Because a Chromebook, nobody could hack you. One trick, when it's doing that, press the shift key to see if it goes up. See if it's, if the page is scrolling down and you press the shift key, it should go in the other direction if it's a stuck space bar. So now, if we know it's a stuck space bar, you could pry the space bar off and blow it out. Make sure there's no, because the space bar is one of the places it tends to get crumbs. Believe it or not.
Yeah, because when I'm hitting the space bar right now, I'm on my Windows.
Yeah.
It scrolls down.
Yep.
Scrolls down. But the problem, I don't. It automatically scrolls me down.
Yeah, that's what space bar does. And the same.
I want to go back up.
Right. So. Well, look, we got to fix this, but I think it's a stuck space bar. So if the space bar is stuck, you're going to get that behavior. Things are going to scroll down real fast because that's what space bar does. It scrolls down one page. A stuck auto-repeating space bar will do that. It also would if you clicked in any text field to go brrr, like it's typing spaces across the text bar, Those are the same. That's from the space bar. Now, it sounds like it is related to software only because the reboot fixes it. And that's what's puzzling me. Because it's two different operating systems, two different computers, same exact behavior. Don't know why that would be. But I would look. I would check your space bar. You know, one thing you could do is take a keyboard. I don't know if you have any lying around. Plug it in and see. I don't know. That's bizarre. I don't know. I can't tell. It's very confusing. Only because it's happening to two different computers at the same time. We'll see if anybody knows the answer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Barb has stumped me. But maybe you can help. If you think you know what's going on, this is a stumper. You can call. You can go to our website, techguylabs.com. Leave a comment. No sign up. No fee. You could even go into the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Let me state the problem clearly and simply. Barb has two computers, two different operating systems, both laptops. One's a Chromebook, one's a Windows machine. At some point when she's using her browser, she goes to a page and starts scrolling up immediately. If she clicks in the search bar, it starts typing blank. The cursor goes right away across. Now, that is the kind of behavior you'd get if you had a stuck space bar, right? If your space bar was stuck, every time you went to a web page, space bar advances a web page one page at a time. A stuck space bar would go all the way down to the bottom of the page. You'd be done. You couldn't go backwards. And then if you click in the search bar, it would type spaces all the way across. So a stuck key, a stuck space bar key would do that. Is it possible she has stuck spacebar keys on two separate computers? Sure. If you eat a lot of fried chicken while you're computing, if there's something, you know, there's food or crumbs getting in there, the spacebar is the most vulnerable key because it's the biggest. It'd be the easiest to get crumbs in it. So, yeah, that's possible. But here is the curveball, Barb, through me. She says it goes away when I reboot my computer. It goes away for a week and then comes back. Now, that's the puzzler, because there's all, you know, stuck space bar. You could even have a USB key or something that's, you know, something on the USB port. It's weird that it would happen to two computers at the same time, but who knows? Sometimes coincidences happen. But what about rebooting? That's a puzzlement. And to make it even harder, I thought, oh, maybe she's using Chrome on the Windows machine. Maybe there's something, an extension installed in Chrome, and Chrome will synchronize extensions on both computers, perhaps. So perhaps that's something new on Chrome, but maybe that's what happened, and maybe there's a bad extension doing that. But she's not using Chrome on Windows. You think there's Bluetooth? Like there's a Bluetooth keyboard? I did have this happen once to me. I had a Bluetooth keyboard attached to my computer, wireless keyboard. Got tired of it, went back to a wired keyboard, put the Bluetooth keyboard in the cupboard, no problem, until I put something on top of it, and then it was typing because it was still paired. So look in your Bluetooth settings. Make sure you don't have anything weird paired to your Chromebook. Maybe that's it. Maybe there's something paired to the Chromebook and the Windows machine. That did happen to me. I put the paired thing, forgot to unpair it. Forgot to turn it off or take the batteries out, put it in my cupboard. It was fine because nothing was typing on it until I put something else in the cupboard weeks later, and all of a sudden my computer's typing. What's going on? Oh, it came to me. It's the Bluetooth keyboard. That's a mystery. 8888, Ask Leo. Barb, keep listening. I have no idea. I have no idea. That is just totally, totally weird. Fred, Fraser Park, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I've got a suggestion on the keyboard.
Oh, good. That was fast. Yes.
Well, that wasn't why I called. I have a real basic question. But on the keyboard, I worked in a place where there were a lot of secretaries. This was late 70s, early 80s. And the keyboards got a lot of use. Yeah. And what would happen... they touch a key, and whatever key they touch, that letter or whatever would just take off. And the solution then was they just kept buying new keyboards. Fortunately, the guy that was in charge of that stuff, I was running a lab in the place. I came in with a can of electronic contact cleaner.
Yeah.
And I would just take the little tube and go to each corner of the key. I didn't pull the keys off, squirt them, and have the secretaries tap on them for a while. Well, that cleaned up the problem.
I'll be darned. So they were actually wearing...
Well, what was happening was there was probably an oxidation
sure.
of the switch that was the key.
Yeah.
Now, if she's running keyboards the same amount of time, it wouldn't be surprising they develop similar problems at the same time.
Sure.
Now, if they're plugged in hardwire, I'd look for that. If they're Bluetooth...
It's a laptop, so they're built in.
Okay, but that still could happen.
Oh, of course it could, yeah. I wouldn't necessarily suggest Barb put contact cleaner in there anymore, but...
I'd turn it upside down and shake it
yeah.
a lot.
And you can it's easy to pry them off and see if there's schmutz in there, but that's interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting because they were used roughly equally across the whole steno pool.
Yeah, what was happening is they had a huge amount of use with the people that were using them. And I assume there was probably oxidation
yeah.
on the switches, which,
yeah.
You know, at the top of the keyboard, you get little keys, but those are actually switches underneath the key.
Yeah.
And so it could be there's just
sure.
switches just have oxidation and stuff on them. An electronic contact cleaner might do it.
Yeah. I'd use compressed air and maybe, I don't know. There's so many plastics now, and most keyboards have these domes. I don't know. That's interesting. That goes back to the days when you had switches. You actually had switches in your keyboards. They have different technologies now. So I don't know. That's an interesting, maybe that's what happened. What's your question, Fred? I love your thinking, though.
This is real basic. This is telephones with poles and wires on them.
I remember those, yes.
Hey, what's that kind of question? If you call a phone number and the phone number has been set to call forwarding somewhere else, can you detect that your phone call is being forwarded? According to the phone company, they say no.
Yeah. I mean, in the old days when we used big switches, remember the phone company used to use mechanical switches? It's actually the history of the phone. The history of phone switching is fascinating. Remember, it used to be operators who would actually physically make a connection point to point from your phone to that phone by putting in, you know, cables.
Phone jacks.
Yeah. In the jack. Yeah. Obviously, that didn't scale very well. At one point, a telephone company executive said, we'd have to hire, if we keep growing at this rate, we're going to have to hire every woman in America by the year 1952.
Well, so. The women made a lot of money.
It was a good job. In fact, I remember in a TV show I was watching some years ago, they showed that, and there was a woman roller skating around because there was to manage them. It was such a big array of operators. Obviously, they replaced those with mechanical switches. And in those days, you'd hear it forwarding because you'd hear a click. The problem is we're now, of course, it's now all done over IP. It's IP-based network switching, and that doesn't make a sound. There might be a slight delay, but how do you know? There's a delay these days anyway.
I was wondering if there'd be like a switch or something on your phone you could push, maybe if you push the number 3-2 times or something like that.
So that you're talking about an incoming call, if that call...
No, it's outgoing. Here's what I'm talking about. I live halfway between L.A. and Bakersfield up in the mountains. Okay, I call a number in Bakersfield. It's supposed to be a business. Let's say it's a dead drop.
Oh, yeah, you can't
that number.
You can't tell. There's no way to tell. Nowadays, most businesses are doing this in software like Asterix, and it is completely what's the opposite of transparent? Opaque to you. You have no idea. I wish there were. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think the phone company knew that. That was their answer to you as well, right? It's just mostly because it's not even often being switched at the phone company level.
Yeah, so my question was not based on a company that's doing something legitimate. I am wondering if somebody is involved in some malfeasance and they're forwarding a call for some reason.
Right. Not that I know of. There's no magic. If the I think the phone company knew this as well. And the reason is, nowadays, all of this is digital. It's not in fact, it's often not done at the phone company level. It's so, for instance, we have a company for our phones called Ring Central. And all of our phones are IP-based. They are not to traditional POTS. But you call us from a POTS line, it'll go through a Ring Central gateway into their network. And at that point, you don't know what's going on. It's digital.
You're using a VoIP system.
Yeah, and anybody who's doing this kind of thing probably is using a VoIP system. A VoIP system with a gateway to a POTS system. And at that point, it's software. You don't know. And that's why, for instance, with Ring Central, I can answer my desk phone with my cell phone. And you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. There'd be no way of knowing that. It's all handled in software. So
too bad.
Yeah. Why, you think somebody is hijacking a call or?
No, it's not hijacking.
You think it's malicious?
I told you about a year ago, and I was a college teacher, and I've been put through a credentialing and vetting. It's been unbelievable, and a lot of people have been having fun at my expense.
Oh God, I'm sorry.
My vision has been screwed up for about 3 or 4 years, and when I started teaching in 76, same thing. And it's been a circus. The feds have been involved.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But, well, you know, it happens. But one of the things, you were talking about high tech on things, and one of the things that I've found with the things I deal with is that people get so wrapped up in what they think is high tech that they forget basics. And they come up with very, very elaborate explanations that are incredibly simple.
Yeah, that's not at all unusual, is it?
I think that was originally called Occam's razor.
Yes, always choose the simplest answer. That's right. Yep.
Yeah, and what I've been dealing with, if you'll excuse me, the virus stuff people have been talking about, they haven't passed high school biology. There's what's called enzyme-linked immunoabsorbent assay. It's an antibody testing. To understand it, you have to know about the window for antibody production, false negatives, negatives, positives, false positives, and how the negative false reading and the positive false reading combined with symptoms can give you lots of misinformation.
Interesting.
And the coronavirus, which is supposedly some big surprise, was identified in 1960. It's been around forever.
I got to run because we're going to another segment, but I hope you find an answer to your conundrum. Oh, Leo Laporte, the disco guy, dancing my way across the floor. I'm gonna pull in the rope as I pull closer and closer to that guy on the roller skates across the dance floor. Look at that. It's Dickie D.
Don't stop me now. Don't stop me now.
Mad Magazine's maddest writer, a disco fool, and our own gizmo wizard. That's why we call him the Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, too.
I like it when it's giz skate.
Giz skate. Oh, that's good.
Only gizmo wizards are allowed to skate at this time.
That's true.
What can I do for you today?
Well, no, you know what?
Let's talk about a gizmo. Yeah.
Yeah, a gadget. Yeah. With no press conferences, I'm just buying tons of stuff, and I'm looking for offbeat stuff. And there's a company called PulseTV.com, and they find weird stuff like the bulb that has 10 LEDs in it.
Well, it looks like it has rocks in it. What's in the bottom?
Well, because it's a terrarium.
Okay. Wait a minute. Okay, let me get this straight. It's a light bulb and it's a terrarium?
And a terrarium. And there are LED light bulbs in the light bulb because the light bulb can't be plugged in because it's battery operated. Actually,
wait a minute. You don't screw that into a light bulb socket?
Well, you can, but just once. No. No, it's someone asked me, can you water the plant? And I said, yes, you can, but just once.
It's decorative.
It's decorative.
But I would be tempted because it's got threads on the top. It looks like a light bulb to screw it in.
You know, Leo, it's way too big.
Oh, it's okay. It's not going to fit any sockets.
It's too big. So you don't have to worry about that.
I want to do a terrarium. I do.
Oh, well, it's done for you. You take them out of the box. Well, first of all, the box copy is just ridiculous. Fortunately, it kept saying remove the spacer, and I couldn't find the spacer. And it turns out that the spacer is screwed into the side of this thing. So when you open it to take out the spacer, the spacer falls out. And since it's clear plastic, we never saw it. Oh. And Dennis and I are going,
you're searching everywhere
no
for a spacer. There ain't no spacer. It's on the floor. All right.
It's on the floor. And there's one other very weird thing. First of all, they normally don't put bad copy points on the box.
No, that's unusual.
But in bold letters, it says, runs for 4 hours continuously. That's not a good thing to put
not
on
a long
on a
time,
box.
No.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it says, but 2 extra batteries included free. There is nothing in the box. So Dennis said, you know what? We had taken it apart and we saw that there's 2 batteries in each. Dennis said, maybe it would run with 1 battery. And I said, oh, you know what? That's a thought.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it cuts down the brightness, which is nice because it was too bright the other way. And then we ended up with 2 extra batteries. But
they put it in the thing. And you're supposed to learn to disconnect.
You're supposed to just on your own.
Just figure that out.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, the thing is, they're dirt cheap.
Well, they ought to be because it's the strangest product I've ever heard of. So let me get this straight. It looks like a giant, and I mean giant, light bulb, right?
Yes, it looks like a giant light bulb, and it's heavy-duty glass. I think if you dropped it, it might not shatter.
Inside the giant light bulb, there are, from bottom to top, rocks. Oh, they're fake? They're not even real rocks?
Well, I guess they're real rocks.
why go to all the trouble of faking rocks when real rocks are so widely available?
That's true.
And then in the real rock, there's like a plant.
A mini succulent plant.
A mini succulent plant. And then above the mini succulent plant, there's these swirly filaments.
There's a wire with 10 LEDs twisted through the bulb.
And is it a light, a plant, or both?
It is a conversation piece. It is sold as a way to decorate a bookcase.
I think this might be cool.
Oh, I think it's very cool. And I have a way around the 4 hours of constant light.
Yeah.
You see, just before the guests enter, you click them on.
Oh, yeah. It has an on-off switch?
Yes. The part that would screw into a light bulb, into a light socket, is actually the on-off switch.
Yeah.
So you have it on and you usher people by the bookcase knowing that they'll see it.
Yeah.
And then you say, go in the other room and hang up your coat. And while they're doing that, you shut the light off. And then before they leave, you say, I'll go get your coats. And then you run and you turn the light on.
It seems odd because one of the advantages of LEDs is they sip power. Yeah.
I suspect that the four-hour thing is just wrong. My guess is...
have you tried? I mean, have they left this on?
That's a good idea. I should have left it on. I'll leave it on all night.
So you said dirt cheap.
$2 for $9.90. They're less than $5 each.
So, yeah. And then I noticed they were on their side. So the rocks are actually glued. It's all glued together. Do you know if there's even anything alive inside? I mean, is it really alive?
No, there's nothing alive in there.
That's not a terrarium. It's just
it's a fakearium.
It's a fakearium.
A fakearium.
So it's really just a decorative lamp with a fake rocks and plant.
Yeah.
I want a real terrarium with growing things in it.
Well, then
it's not going to be $450. You got my hopes up. There's actually, this is an interesting pandemic business. There's a terrarium company that drives to your house and leaves all the parts that you need. And then you get all the parts. And then later that day, they have a Zoom call with all the people who got the parts, showing you how to put your terrarium together. Isn't that a good idea?
I think it's great.
Lisa and I want to do that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, this, you take it out and do a Zoom call, and they say, turn it on.
It's and a short Zoom and call.
It's a very short call.
The light-up terrarium glass bulbs. Where can I get these?
Name of the company is PulseTV.com.
Pulse TV? Doesn't sound like a light-up terrarium company to me. Yeah, actually, the best way to do this, go to Dick's website, GIZWIZ.BIZ. Gizwiz.biz, and click the button that says that Gizwiz visits the tech guy. I'm the tech guy. He's the Gizwiz. He visits me, shows me crap, and then puts it on his webpage, and it's all there.
I have nothing to do with this company. I just thought it was a fun thing.
No, he doesn't make money on this. It must be one of those as seen on TV companies, right? Something like that.
That's my guess.
Yeah.
I think it was as seen on TV, but no one watched companies.
Nobody was watching. He also has
a
button right below it saying, "What the heck is it?" Contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. If you can figure out what this close-up picture of a gizmo or gadget is. And he's got lots of other great stuff, mad stuff and so forth for sale there. Because he's Mad Magazine's maddest writer. Mm-hmm. And you'll also see him on ABC World News Now. And that's why he has... unaccountably, an ABC World News Now microphone.
Yeah, because I'm doing it from home.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. ABC News presents.
I never want to go to the studio.
I love it that everybody now, we're watching everybody in their house. It's the strangest. Even TV shows, they're doing like the Voice. They're doing it from their house.
Yes.
So strange. What a world.
No makeup lady, sitting around waiting for stuff.
Yeah, it's so strange. Thank you, Dickie D. Gizwiz. Okay. Don't forget, by the way, he does a great show called the Gizwiz Podcast at gizwiz.tv with the newest YouTube star, Chad Johnson. Just congratulate him for me on his millionth.
Oh, my gosh. A million subscribers.
That's kind of mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah. It is.
Well done.
Amazing.
Thank you, Dickie D. Appreciate
it. Okay, buddy. Take care.
Take care. Thanks to Lady Laura, our musical director. You've been hitting it out of the... you've been out of this world this week. Thank you, Lady Laura. To Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. Thanks to you for joining me. I'm Leo Laporte. Have a safe Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.